What about you, Dave? If you could cosplay as anything, would you cosplay as Harrison Ford from What Lies Beneath?
No, I'd cosplay as Clark Gregg writing the screenplay, saying to himself, you know, in a decade, I'm going to be a Marvel person and it's I won't have to write screenplays anymore.
Welcome to Spoiler Peace Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Evan Crean. I am co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living. My pronouns are he, him.
My name is Megan Kearns. My pronouns are she, her. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network, and I too am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
My name is Dave Riedel. Pronouns are he, him. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and occasionally I write about movies and stuff.
Yeah. Yes, you do.
Yeah, you do.
Right.
As promised, a couple of episodes ago on episode 400, we said we wanted to include more guests on the show, and so we are very excited today that we have a guest with us, and we're very excited that Jason from Binge Movies is here. Welcome, Jason.
It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you.
Want to tell the folks at home about your show?
Well, first and foremost, I'm going to say it's my ultimate pleasure to be here because this is Megan Kearns' podcast, and I'm a big fan of Megan.
Thank you, Jason. Also, you might be my number one fan.
My county is currently under a tornado warning. So this may be the last recording that I ever do. If the audio quality gets spotty or if I die, ladies and gentlemen, during the recording, it's because I was taken up like Elijah in a whirlwind.
Oh, man.
I'll cast my podcasting mantle down from the heavens, though, upon any of my spiritual sons and daughters, and they can receive a double portion of my podcasting anointing. But that's... Is that too much? Is it...
Or maybe not enough.
Yeah, I think you need to commit to this more.
That I think that describes the podcast perfectly right there.
Yeah.
Oh, you really want me to tell you about my podcast?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. So I'm the host of Binge Movies. We've been around in some form or another since 2015. We've had some reboots along the way because just like Hollywood, every once in a while, you kind of spice it up. You got to reboot it. And do the same thing you did, but do it slightly different. And people don't know the difference. And you get the rubes and the marks that way. And that's what I try to model my life after Hollywood. I try to model my personal life and my podcast after Hollywood executives. They are the upper echelon of ethics and morals. So typically what we do is we binge movies. It's in the title. And we have a guest like a Megan or a film critic like anybody on this show. They come on with me. We watch five films. We review them. We rank them. And then we have two lists all season long. We have nice little compact seasons. We have two lists. We have the short list, which is my list. And we have the guest list. And so our rotating guests pick the best of the week. And then at the end, the best of the guest list and the best of the short list face off on something Megan has competed in, something we call last movie standing, which is, if you could imagine, collegiate speech team debate meets NPR meets WrestleMania. That's last movie standing. If it doesn't make sense to you, that's okay. And we have, you know, two film critics. I'm basically just the referee. I mediate the rounds and I take my little notes. But our listeners vote at the end of the season for the movie which is most worthy of preservation for all time, even beyond the end times. And we believe, you know, the AFI, the this, the that. But we're trying to get to a people's canon. We're trying to open it up. We're trying to decentralize cinematic power, give it back to the people. Our listeners vote. And sometimes we even do, I shudder to think, turn to film Twitter and we let them have a say. Ooh. And we then put that movie into our no copyright infringement intended vault. And it joins the likes of things like Parasite, Jurassic Park, Saving Private Ryan, which beat Rocky, which I just can't believe.
Mm. Whoa.
Among many other things. So it's a fun little thing. And it's a show that is, it's not for everybody, but the people it's for, it's really for.
Very nice. Now, when you moderate these discussions, the people who like it like it a lot. I mean, that's the best you can ask for, really. It's like, you know, the people who are engaged are really engaged with it.
Well, it's very true. We like to say that we cover everything from the Francois Truffauts to the Tommy Wiseaus. There's no movie or type of movie that we won't cover. And we've had Megan on to talk about the AFI top five, and we re-ranked mm-hmm. the audacity of us. We re-ranked the AFI top five. That's how we opened up our season as this episode comes out. And then just this week, as this episode comes out, we released a movie where we ranked the video game movies of the 1990s. So, ooh, you know, that's
fun.
That's, and we're going to finish it off with Stanley Kubrick. So there you go.
Yeah.
A little bit of something for everybody.
We're for hardcore cinephiles and for casual nostalgic movie fans. We're for everybody.
I dig it.
That's why the show is so great.
It's we're for everybody, but we're rejected by most. So it just, you know. Yeah.
Well, we're glad you're here with us today, Jason. And we're excited to talk about some movies with you. First, I want to say that over on our Patreon exclusive audio this week, we are talking about the 2000 film What Lies Beneath. And you'll just have to be a patron to hear why we picked that film and what we have to say about it. So definitely, if you're a patron, head over and check that out. And if you're not a patron, think about signing up so you can hear us talk about What Lies Beneath. You know you want to. As for the main show this week, we have one big movie that we're going to talk about. It is a horror movie. Shocking, I know, because we never cover horror on this show.
Mm. We don't like genre films.
Nope, not us. So this week's movie is X, and yes, that's the title. Just one letter. This is a film that is written and directed by Ty West. If you're a horror fan, you probably recognize that name. He's kind of in the indie horror camp, but I always think of him as getting shot with an arrow and you're next.
Yeah.
Which is a high,
great
high quality appearance. But this movie is, here's the one sentence IMDb plot summary. In 1979, a group of young filmmakers set out to make an adult film in rural Texas. But when their reclusive elderly hosts catch them in the act, the cast find themselves fighting for their lives. How do we feel about that summary, gang?
Fairly accurate, but it leaves a lot out.
I mean, y'all know how I feel about IMDb summaries.
Yes, you are not a fan.
I am not.
No. Does one of you want to flesh it out a little bit more, and then we'll let Jason at this thing because he's our guest. We want to hear what he has to say about this movie.
Megan, feel free.
Oh, I was going to say, Dave, go to town.
Well, I mean, it's a slasher movie. I mean, what do you, you know, sort of. Are the deaths mostly slasher, except for the one that's by crocodile? Or actually, I guess it's North America, right? So it's an alligator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these wannabe porn stars, they're in Texas somewhere. They decide they're going to make a low-budge film on 16mm, I might add, but Martin Henderson is thinking ahead for the new video market, and he's, you know, he's not a dope. He knows what he potentially has on his hands.
Mm-hmm.
He's comparing it to Debbie Does Dallas and how it's going to be better. What's that, Evan?
No, you just said what I was about to say. They were, you know, they saw the success of Debbie Does Dallas and they wanted to capitalize on that.
Yeah. So they rent this ramshackle, I guess it's a guest house. I don't know. It's on a farm in Texas, even though it was shot in New Zealand. And once the homeowners figure out what the cast and crew are doing, because it turns out there are actually a couple of horn dogs who are upset that they can't perform anymore, they start killing everyone. I mean, that's kind of a simple, almost simplistic plot summary, but that's more or less what happens. Am I right? Did I get it?
Yeah. Okay. That's the gist of it.
Yeah, I think you've got plenty to work with now, listeners.
Wait, I'm confused. I thought that was the summary of Porky's 2, The Revenge.
Yes, it is. No, that's the next day. Porky's 3 is The Revenge.
Oh, I'm sorry. Come on. I'm sorry.
I know my two Bob Clark movies and my non-Bob Clark movies.
So, you know. Porky's.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
I was gonna say, I don't know if that's a badge of
what
honor.
What a claim to fame.
I know this isn't a video.
Yeah, I'm trying to forget that.
I know this isn't a video cast, a V-cast. I know this isn't on YouTube. I am slightly disappointed that no one has noticed, especially Megan, just how sharp she is. I'm wearing a shirt. I know that I'm lit kind of like a horror giallo movie in here.
Yeah, but, you are.
You are.
Bathed in red.
It is the swamp, and it's got a big-ass gator on it. That's my shirt. I'm wearing a shirt that's about a thing in the movie. My shirt is a reference to a thing in the movie.
To Tobe Hooper, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that this is the level of the references that Ty West has in his movie that everybody seems to think he's a genius. Have you eaten alive? Anybody heard of Tobe Hooper? It's foreshadowing because there's a mural of a gator eating a bikini chick at the strip club. And that's the girl who first went out the door. And that door, by the way, every door we see is that same aspect ratio is 16 millimeter. You get it, right? I know I'm coming in hot.
Yeah, bring it in.
I mean, I love that you're coming in hot.
I dig it.
I can't.
This was on one of my like most anticipated, you know, long list for the year. You know, come on, A24, horror, whatever. Sign me up. I have a movie podcast. I have to like it contractually, and I'm excited for it. And I go there and I watch this movie. And for every good thing that's in this film, there's at least one to two things that I just think stink. I think especially the opening, I think the first 25 minutes is full of gimmicks. Just from the split screen to it's like just throwing gimmick on top of gimmick on top of gimmick onto this movie. And it's like at a certain point, I was like, okay, I get it. Yeah, Tobe Hooper, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. They're in the van, eating alive. Yeah, there's a gator. The Farmer's Daughter, a famous porno from 1976. I get it. It's 1979. We're at the threshold of the golden age of slashers, which is 1980 to 1984, and the golden era of porn because of home video. And in case you really don't get it, they have a whole conversation about we're heading into the golden age of porno. We know, okay? We're at the threshold of the religious right and the televangelist boom and scandals. All but we're at the cusp of the 80s. I got it. In the meantime, what are you going to do? What story are you going to tell? What characters are you going to give me? You know, those aren't themes. Those are ideas. Those are references. Those are cultural and cinematic Easter eggs. They're not thematic through lines that come together in this movie in any satisfying way whatsoever. The movie.
Well, good night.
Go ahead. I'll keep going.
That's
go
it.
Ahead.
I mean, you've said everything I was going to say except more eloquently, so we may as well just end now. So, anyway, no, please.
And see, please here's the thing on. Is I like the like, sort of movies. This movie has good stuff in it. I mean, every time he does an overhead shot, all the cinematography, the most pulse-pounding thing in this movie is when she's swimming and the gator's coming up behind her.
Oh, my God, that scene.
Such a great
scene.
And
the dude in the shower and the overhead, and it seems like he's in an infinite shower and a shower curtain. And so there's great stuff in this movie. The cinematography, I think, is outstanding. I would even say I think the direction's pretty good.
I think the editing and sound editing is really good.
The sound editing is fantastic because there's stuff coming from different regions of the theater. And the my gosh, it's absolutely great. The script, I think, stinks, and the color palette of this movie is so blah. And I said this, I did a little spoiler-free thing on my show. I get that you don't want to go the oversaturated whatever because then it becomes too much like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but there's nothing in this movie that's like visually interesting really at all. It's color corrected, I think, like poorly and not in a good way. And so when they throw on these like After Effects 70s filters to do like these gimmicky kind of insert shots, it just didn't work. And it was like, is this the movie that everybody is raving about? Like, I think the movie was at its best when it was in one of two places. One, when it was being its most visceral, and two, when it was really dealing with the horrors of aging. Because basically this thing presents somebody in old age makeup and goes, look at the grotesquerie of being elderly and nude. Look how grotesque mm-hmm. it is for old people to fuck. That is really the horror of this movie. I think that's effective. Yeah. There's a then you're grossed out by it. Then you think about like, oh my God, what does that mean about me that I'm grossed out? And like, oh my, and you're forced to confront yourself and all the good stuff that artsy horror is supposed to do. Just about everything else outside of that is just like, it felt just like a waste of time. It felt like running water. It was just passing me by. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. It wasn't effective. And the movie went in fits and starts. It pulled me in. It got me nervous. And then it built the tension, just released. And then the actual like gore part of it, it's fine, but it's nothing we haven't seen in gore movies forever. Like I don't, mm-hmm. why I will open your show back to you now. Why is this? What is going on? What are the critics drinking here? I don't understand what everybody is like. This is the greatest horror movie of the 20th century. I'm like, what? I don't.
Yeah.
Am I off?
No, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I found it kind of bland and uninspired, or should I say inspired in the wrong way? Kind of like how you described. Yeah, I get it. Texas Chainsaw, you know, Eaten Alive, and oh, look, it's a 16 millimeter framing, like all that kind of stuff. I found myself once, you know, the gimmick is revealed that these, well, you know, from the beginning that the elderly couple's going to be doing all yeah. the killing, because that's just, you just know that. Mm-hmm. But then when it starts happening, it's like, all right, well, now I just have to wait for this all to be over. And then it is, you know, there's nothing.
Well, so at the midpoint of the movie, right, to your point, Dave, at the midpoint of the movie where they have a discussion and one of the characters is like, I want to be in the movie. And that whole thing. Okay. Oh, yeah. Now this could be.
Oh, Lorraine. Yeah,
this could be
Lorraine,
interesting.
Lorraine, the boom operator.
And then his response is, you know, as a director as well, that can't happen because we're already shot the movie and we can't change the plot halfway through. And her response is, well, Psycho did that, or this movie did that, or that movie did that. And you love those movies. And he's like, yeah, but this is different. That's horror. This is porn or whatever. Then mm-hmm. your thinking is, well, then they're going to do a genre flip into this movie. Or something, and like that's them, like, and they almost feign like they're going to do some kind of a weird flip in the movie where it's going to be morph into something else. And I guess it does when it was revealed that the elderly molesting woman is even more molesty than we already knew she was. Like, there is no flip. Other yeah. than they have yeah. sex slaves, but we already know that because she's getting naked and climbing into bed and rubbing people's right. bodies. And we've already seen her murder and we've already, like, there's no reveal. I didn't understand, like, yeah. with all of its foreshadowing and like, oh, it's going to pop people's eyes out. And then he gets the giallo eye gouge with the pitchfork.
Yeah.
It was like, okay.
So disappointing.
Yeah. Like, you knew that, like, all that stuff stuck out. It was like every line is like, well, that's how they're going to die, right? That's how they're going to die. Mm-hmm. And I think the only interesting kind of idea is it kind of flips the farmer's daughter penthouse letter idea, or the slasher idea, or the like last house on the left idea, or the Hills Have Eyes idea, or the Texas Chain. It kind of flips it around because really the elderly lady, Pearl, it's not a mom who's going out and collecting women for her sons to rape.
Right.
It's an old
right.
man who's collecting young people of all genders for his wife to rape. Yes. That's the innovation mm-hmm. here. And what I thought
what
was
an innovation.
Yeah, it's like, if you can call it an innovation, right. but yes, your point is correct.
It upends expectations.
To me, I thought, okay, what that tells me is the movie he's really interested in is the movie he's going to do next.
Oh, for sure.
Pearl. That's where I think mm-hmm. the ideas are probably going to be. That's like where even if you look at it, it's like, it's got style. It's got all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, I didn't see the trailer. I left before. I didn't know that it was going to play at the end of the movie. I should have known. All movies do this now. But I recorded mm-hmm. that. I was like, I think that the next, it just had the feeling of like the next one's going to be the one that really he's really interested in. And come to find out, then I saw the trailer, and then because it's online now, and I was like, Oh yeah, yeah. That's, and I don't know if it's gonna be good, but I think that's the one he gives a shit about. And I don't like, what is the point of this movie? I'm sorry, I'm ranting.
I mean, no, I appreciate your rants. I mean, I'm always happy to see Brittany Snow do something outside of whatever that show she was on where, you know, she wanted to sing and everything. And then
American Dreams.
That's the one. Dreams with a Z, right?
Or I don't know. Pitch Perfect.
The franchise. Is she in Pitch Perfect?
Pitch Perfect.
Yeah, she is in Pitch Perfect.
I just.
But she's fantastic.
She's great.
By the way.
And then she just gets chomped by an alligator.
Excellent.
You know?
Well, yeah.
Which you see.
Which is set up so earlier.
It's set up earlier. And then she's just fucking standing on the pier yelling at. And it's just like, when is she going to get eaten by the alligator? 3, 2, 1, chomp. You know, it's just.
Bam.
such a bummer. I mean, I was just. I hate to say things like, oh, this movie's such a bummer. But it was just so disappointing. I've only seen one other Ty West movie, and I should have known this because I've complained about this before off mic, and I'm going to complain about it on mic. I've seen the last movie he made, the Western, In a Valley of Violence, I think it's called, which you could conceivably, if any of you have seen it, it's John Wick in 1880. Because Ethan Hawke, you know, he's sad for some reason, then someone kills his dog, and then he's like, I'm going to kill everyone, and that's what he does. But Ziggy from The Wire is the son of John Travolta, and he keeps calling John Travolta dad. My dad. My dad. It's 1880. You don't say dad in 1880. No one did that. Pa. Father. Whatever. It just made me so mad, and it's such a tiny little stupid detail, and I thought about that 10 times while I was watching X. It's like, this is a guy who thinks that people said dad in 1880. Sorry, does that make sense? It's just like, that's how much thought goes into this. You know?
A very specific gripe that I think, yeah, exposes a larger thought process and how you process movies.
No, but it's the idea that like the ideas in this movie are there, but none of them are thoughtful. Does that make sense? It's just like, oh, we're sending up porn. Oh, we're sending up horror. It's like Jason was saying, it's all homage, homage, homage. Where are the ideas? You know?
Well, I think you both have touched on incredibly fascinating things. And it is really interesting that this has really struck a chord with so many audiences and film critics. And it's kind of wild that it has, because usually there's this big divide, especially with slashers, where horror critics will latch onto something, but audience as well, or vice versa. Like, you know, regular critics, regular non-genre critics will detest something, but horror critics will love it. And this is kind of universally lauded, which is strange. And I read a shit ton of reviews of this film. I read a shit ton of interviews with Ty West. And trying to glean why this is so beloved amongst people. And Ty West kind of in all the interviews says kind of the same spiel, that he is very concerned with the craft of filmmaking and wanted to get the cinematography very precise, wanted the editing precise, all of those details. And I think this film is excellent when it comes to the technical elements. Like we've all said, the editing is superb. Cinematography is superb. That's all great. I have seen this film called A Love Letter to Slashers and separately A Love Letter to Filmmaking.
To slashers?
But what I'm going to say is I think it's someone who knows their film history, who's watched a ton of films and wants to show everything off without really having a clear voice himself. And it's funny because so many people have said like, well, this isn't pastiche, you know, it's paying homage, but he's doing his own thing. And I don't really think he is.
No.
And what's fascinating to me and disturbing to me is that you have this really great cast. Mia Goth, I love her. Love her in High Life. Love her in Emma. Love her in this. She's great. She can do everything. Love Brittany Snow. Brittany Snow is a delight in this. She's so funny. She's great. She sings a beautiful cover of Landslide.
Yeah,
love
yeah,
it. Want
she
more.
Does. That's great.
So good. Yeah. Jenna Ortega is great. Martin Henderson. Dave, I know you're not a fan, but I think he's good in this. But, you know, so this is a really... Kid Cudi is great. Like, this is a really solid cast. So you have a good cast. You have all these great technical elements. You have all of these things that are paying homage to 70s horror. But the problem, like you both have said, is that, and I like the characters, like all these elements, but the problem is that there are no ideas. And this film is incredibly ageist. It is disgustingly ageist. It is appalling in its ageism that we should be terrified of turning old. We should be terrified and grossed out by old people fucking. Like, it's just, it's disgusting. And it's not saying anything new. It's a sex positive film. That's not because, you know, the women are talking openly about their bodies and about sex, and that's awesome and that's great. But it's not saying anything interesting. It's not saying anything interesting about aging. It's not saying anything interesting about sexuality. It's not saying anything interesting about any of these things. And that's what was so frustrating to me. I'm like, okay, this is kind of a fun ride, sort of, but it just kind of left me empty inside. It's like eating like a big bowl of like candy. Like, sure, okay, it's fine. But I'm left empty and pissed off afterwards because I feel gross. Like, it just, I just wanted more thoughts, more ideas, something deeper. And it's just, it's saying nothing. And that's really what bothered me about
this. One of the things that horror movies are really good at when they're really good, and even the ones that aren't so good, when they do have ideas, and I know there's a whole debate right now about the idea of elevated horror, but if any, but bear with me for a second. The notion of it, I think, is makes a little bit of sense. It's horror movies with ideas, I think, is a better way to put it. And I guess all movies have ideas, but except for maybe this one. And but I guess what I'm trying to get at is you have all this visual style and all this sizzle and all this precision, but it's all sort of divorced from whatever the themes are supposed to be of the actual movie. So you have this disjointed, disconnected thing that's happening. It's fine if you want to present to us our fears of aging, because horror is all about fear. And so if you wanted to be like, we're all afraid of death and mortality, and you could make the argument that that's what the slasher really is, and the subjective camera angle, and we're from the killer's point of view, and we see the death happening, and you could do all that sort of stuff. And it's like, we have to face our mortality and our some of our more licentious desires and all this sort of stuff. Okay, fine. That's not what this movie does. This movie doesn't doesn't use its style and doesn't use its technique to put us into its ideas and get us into a particular frame of mind to cause us to reflect upon ourselves. The movie doesn't do that. But the movie seems to present itself as that's what it's doing. And I know a lot of people are responding to this as if, well, it's a real black comedy. And there are jokes in it, and there is a sense of humor to it. But my issue was, I didn't find it funny.
No, it's not particularly funny.
Not at all.
No. I didn't find it funny at all. If what you find funny is elderly people, I think there's a funnier Adam Sandler movie, which is when the old lady is trying to escape the nursing home and is like, Mister, you got to get me out of here. That gives, when the air conditioner falls on that lady, I get a bigger laugh out of that than I do this, because it's like, oh, here's Mia Goth and, you know, her boobs are saggy and she's chasing people around and she's naked and you should be scared or you should laugh. Ha ha ha. Isn't it funny? Yeah. Here's a guy in tidy whities. That's the joke. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I didn't even think about it.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like everybody is like, okay. Yeah. It's like there's one moment that I kind of chuckled at, and I guess it's she uses a shotgun and it blows her out the front door to the screen door. Mm-hmm. But
that was kind of funny.
That gag is funnier in Hot Fuzz because he kicks her right in the face. That's the funny version of that gag. Because you mix the genre of the action movie, but it's juxtaposed against this old lady on a farm. And so you take those two things and you put it together. It looks silly, right? You got this freaking flying kick into this woman's face, and it's with a hard cut, and it's funny. Nothing here is executed at that level. And I guess, like, an Edgar Wright, that's a filmmaker who the style, the substance, the sizzle, the cut, the edit, the feeling oftentimes accentuates the ideas of the movie or accentuates the theme or the tone of the movie. This isn't doing that. This is just, you've got almost like two different trains of thought going on at the same time. And they don't ironically cross to make an exit at any point. And so this movie misses the mark. That was my 90s like tagline. What's my pool quote for them?
I love that.
It just came to me.
Love that.
Does that make sense? Am I being clear? I feel like.
No, you're being very clear. It's all style, no substance. That's what's happening.
I feel like.
Yeah. I was going to say you're being clearer than I was with my, you know, calling people dad in 1880.
Right. But you gave a tangible example, Dave. It's okay.
Thank you.
It was good. I just want to say, Jason, I want to apologize for because the elevated horror conversation is just, it's a very tedious one. Not that you brought it up. You had great things to say. That conversation is very tedious from so many people who just don't understand horror. So it's like, oh God.
Okay. So,
but yeah, not
here's what, here. Here's where most people are coming from as they're watching. This is not, I was going to sound film snobby, but most people are just watching, you know, popular entertainment because that's what normal people do who have lives. For those of us who are movie obsessives on this show, we watch everything. So you and yes. I very briefly talked about Jack Frost, mm-hmm. which is a killer snowman movie. Now that's technically a horror film. Now there's also like The Shining, or there's also like other, you know, other movies out there, or even Texas Chainsaw Massacre. To me, that's elevated horror. And then you have Jack Frost.
Agreed.
So there is a spectrum, just as there is with every genre, of movies that just kind of exist as just the whatever base, their base entertainments. And then there are movies that have ideas and connect the ideas. And this is a movie that wants to kind of present itself as like, it's lurid, it's base, it's erotic, it's porno, and it's going to be in your theater. You know, yeah. Well, so what? I got the internet, bro. Like, I've seen worse in middle school. Like, what is this? Like, you know, and it's like, ooh, yeah. It's lurid, and it's X. And then, like, here's somebody getting decapitated, and like, ooh. And it's like, oh, okay, that's fine. But, like, something like Saint Maud, like the final shot of Saint Maud,
haunting,
is more haunting and visceral and horrific than anything I've seen in this movie.
Yep. Oh, Saint Maud mm-hmm. is such a
you
masterpiece.
You pick elements of Hereditary, the Babadook, all these things that get thrown into that category of quote unquote elevated horror. It Follows, whatever. And it's like, ooh, that's haunting. I'd even throw something like in like The Guest, right? Like an indie movie. It's kind of horror, sci-fi, action, just its own weird mashup. And it's like, there's performance notes of him just like staring off at the bed. And it's like, ooh, ooh, ooh. It's like, you know, and you just, and there's none of that. I got no goosebumps. I got no thrills, mm-hmm. no chills. I got nothing. Yeah. I got nothing out of this.
I think we should let Evan talk because I'm sure he has lots of things to say, but you know what? Everything you're saying about this movie's like lack of ideas is summed up in the shot of Brittany Snow wiping semen off her back after their big shot, because that's this movie's big thing, that Ty West is going, you know what will be subversive if we see someone wiping semen off of her back because she just shot a porn scene. That's right. The level of thought.
And the punchline is the cum rag gets thrown on to the prude, the church mouse.
Yes. Yeah. Church mouse. I mean, I kind of love in any film when, you know, semen is being wiped off.
Sure.
Listen, bodily fluids happen during sex. You got to clean up. I love it. I love seeing it on screen.
I'm just saying, though, that this is it's supposed to be like, look, look what she's doing. It's in a movie.
Like I said, this movie is not as clever as it thinks it is. But I think, Evan, I want to hear what you have to say. Because I could go on.
I mean, I would definitely echo a lot of the things that you've said. For me, I thought the movie was really strong from a technical perspective, and I'm not going to belabor any of those points. But I really agree with you all when you were talking about how this movie does not have its own ideas. It's homage. It's like themes, but no ideas. And I think the times it starts to approach an original idea, it like completely blows the opportunity. Like starting with the idea. Well, first of all, the fact that Mia Goth, the main character, also plays, you know, Pearl, the old woman, I think could have been something interesting that they don't do anything interesting with. But and then this idea that, you know, the old people are doing the killing, and they kind of set it up as like, oh, we're in, you know, like very right wing Christian country. And so like you might go into this movie thinking, oh, you know, it's a morality thing and the old people are going to be offended by the sex. So they're going to want to kill these kids because they're mad about that. And then they're like, oh, wait, no, actually, they're horny. That's why they want to kill these kids. But like, and so I think that is a cool idea. But yeah. then they just like you said, Megan, it's like incredibly ageist. It makes them the butt of the joke the entire time. It feels so icky. And it's just like mm-hmm. that and a couple other things I'll mention in a minute just made me feel so icky, and that this movie was so problematic that I don't understand why everyone is so universally praising it. Like, did anyone else like look at these movies' themes, digest them and think, yeah, that's a troubling message. This is a troubling message that like the old people are killing because they're horny and they're like upset that they can't fuck anymore. And so they're just like gonna kill these young people to get their jollies. And so like that in itself is problematic, but then there's the scene where they're, you know, talking about being sexually liberated. And I think they stumbled on just another interesting idea that they could like completely blow in execution. When you have, you know, the Jenna Ortega character, you know, the church mouse, she's the boom operator. She's there, you know, her boyfriend's the director, you know, and then it's like she wants to be in the movie. And so they're having this conversation about, you know, like, you know, sexual liberation, and it's her body, her choice. She should be allowed to be in the movie. And they're just like, you know, the director, you know, is not on board with it. And it's like, I don't know where you draw the line between someone's bodily autonomy and setting a boundary in a relationship that like someone just blows right past. Like, yes, it is her body, her choice. But like, I don't like there's just this like very blurry line in the movie that I think they don't really take the time to like think about or have any kind of nuance where he's just like not okay with it, but then shoots it anyway. And then he's like, then they do the thing where he's like, oh, he's like crying in a cold shower, and then he wants to leave, and that's how he gets murdered. So I don't know. I think they're just like large.
That he'd turn into the killer after that, frankly.
I don't think I needed that. I don't know. I feel like there's some like hugely problematic things, scenes, plot elements at the core of this movie, and I don't understand why more people aren't talking about it.
I think horror is a great genre to for the taboo and for the problematic and to push things into our face that we don't like thinking about. So again, if you want to make a movie that's like old people, like the ravages of aging are horrific and terrifying, and it's the idea of like fading beauty and all this sort of stuff, and essentially this very, again, I'm going to use the term like licentious woman who is in this very weird cuckolding relationship with this World War One, World War II veteran. And he's been going around collecting different people for her to have in a rape dungeon for years and all this sort of stuff. And then now, but like she was beautiful. And so now they have to like take by force, and we're flipping those ideas around on its head because it's a woman who's the main antagonist, really. Like, okay, there's a movie there. There's mm-hmm. a horror movie there. There's a genre movie there. There's an exploitation movie there. There's something there that like could really fuck with your head, because everybody has fears of mortality and aging. What if I get sick? And, you know, all this sort of stuff. It's a primal instinct in all of us, right? To survive, and aging and entropy and all these things are horrific. And so, but you could do that in a way that, again, forces us to look at it, think about it, and still gives the visceral stuff, still gives the thrills, the chills, the kills, the blood, the gore. I'm not against any of that. It's just they kind of present it, and like both of you said, and then they sort of like, I don't know. It's almost like he fell ass backwards into some themes and then didn't realize he did or wasn't interested in exploring them. Because with the Ortega character, afterwards, when he disappears, she's like, there's this realization of like, I kind of got caught up in the moment there, and I didn't really think about how I would hurt him in our relationship. I didn't want to break up mm-hmm. or nothing. I wasn't viewing it as me being unfaithful, but now I guess I kind of was, and boy, I fucked up, and I should probably make this right. Doesn't mean anything. It doesn't go anywhere. There's no, right. It doesn't develop her as a character at all.
There's not nuance there.
Yeah, there's no nuance there. And you know, yeah, it's just like, you could have done something with that about like, okay, you know what? We're also on the cusp of, we're in the free will in 70s. It's not quite free love 60s, but we're in the free will in 70s. And we got cocaine, we got all this sort of stuff. Well, we're just a few short years from another boom period, which is the AIDS epidemic. So we could, and it ravaged the porn industry. So we could have explored some of that of like, yeah, bodily autonomy. But also at the same time, like if you are in a monogamous relationship or boundaried relationship, what does that look like? And, you know, like what are the limits of free love and all that, like all this sort of shit, none of it. And nope. It's like they present it. It's like they present it almost as if they know what they're doing and they don't do anything with it. And there's so much, there is so much fear and horror and spookiness in all of those concepts and all of those ideas that it's almost like this movie is almost more frustrating than the average movie because it should be outstanding. Like I should have just walked out this movie going, by God, that's one of the, like that we had, it had all the blood, mm-hmm. the guts. It's a hard R. It's funny and it's clever and it's insightful and it's scary and it's thrilling. And it just isn't, it's just, it kind of like a, I'm ambivalent towards it. And that's almost worse. I almost wish I hated it, but I don't. I'm just, I know I'm passionate about it because it could be a classic. It's almost like the stuff is there. The ingredients are there. It's like when you want pizza, but all you can get is Papa John's, you know, it's like the
oh God, never succumb to Papa
it's
John's.
Like wow. I guess it's in the shape of pizza and in a pinch, it'll do you. But when you really, it's not really the stuff is there, but for some reason, the way they combined it, it doesn't taste that good.
You know? Exactly. That, all the ingredients, nope. But yeah.
Yeah.
It's they the have, Papa
John's. They don't know what to do with it.
They have better ingredients. They don't have better pizza. And that's exactly. This movie. It has better ingredients. We talked about it, mm-hmm. but it doesn't yeah. make a better yep. movie.
Right. They burnt the pizza in the oven to continue your metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Overbaked.
It's so interesting because in so many of the reviews I read, people talked about the entrepreneurial spirit of porn and the entrepreneurial spirit of 70s horror, and that's really what Ty West is capturing. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, is he though?
No, I don't.
But does that make the movie good? Right. Like, just because you.
Right.
Right.
Right. Okay. Exactly.
Okay.
And listen, I've talked about this many times, and Dave, I know you feel this way too. Like, I'm all for a movie where nothing happens, quote unquote, nothing, but really everything happens. I'm all for a film that's weird yep. and you just have to succumb and enjoy the ride and enjoy the visceral aesthetics, all for that. But yeah, And there were so many things I liked about this film. Jason, I really agree with what you're saying because it does make it more frustrating that it's kind of inching so close, but just it's not quite doing yeah. it. And it's like, oh, that's such a bummer.
Because you get a good performance, right? From like,
yes. Mm-hmm.
And like, oh, well, wow, that's a great performance. Or a great line of dialogue. And then it's followed up with just shit dialogue. You're like, wait, what? And then you get like a really good scene and you'll be like, oh my gosh, there's a gator in there and she's in this water and the water's filthy and you probably shouldn't be in it. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of spooky. Like, is that an old lady? What is that? And it's in the woods. It's looking at her, blah, 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 blah. And then when it reveals what it really is, when we finally get the gator kill, it's not done all that well. When we really start getting into the pearl stuff, it's like creepy. And then at a certain point, we're just gawking at an old body. And then at a certain right. point, yeah. and you're like, this is an old body. This is a very clear young woman in old makeup. And old you know makeup. What? I yeah. wish this yeah. movie would have had the balls to just have an old lady be Thank the killer. You. Because mm-hmm. because yes. one of us, somebody on this podcast tipped her hand to it. And then I think I derailed us. Dave, I think it was you, like the idea of like, what's the juxtaposition, even the cross cutting in the editing of the lemonade and the this and the that and the sex scene and the this and the old ladies in the sex scene. And there's all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, is this going to be like a causality loop where this is actually Pearl really is Mia Goth's character or vice versa? Is she like cursed or something? And she's going to come under a curse and replace the old lady. And they have those ideas there of basically like, one day your looks are going to fade and then you're just going to be this like horny, like cocaine infested person. But it doesn't, there's no through line there. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting you say that because Ty West said that he envisioned Pearl and Maxine as two separate characters, but the exact same person. And I'm like, okay, but who cares? Like, but what are you doing?
That's my point. And also, I don't feel like we actually get across that bridge.
No, no, it's just, it feels more like a warning, like a harbinger of shitty things to come. Like, Maxine, you're sexing it up. And I just called this film sex positive, but in this way it is not. But it's like, you're sexing it up, you're coking it up, and this is what's going to happen to you. You're going to be turned into a grotesque old woman who is murdering people because she's horny.
Yeah, okay. But the difference here is what Pearl seems to have wanted, and we'll find out in the prequel, but what Pearl seems to have wanted was to be, it's like a warped sense of being loved. And I guess that you could say it's the same thing because this girl wants to be famous or whatever. And then they have this whole subplot with the dad who's the pastor. And they all, I'm going to just say something. They fucking botched that whole, it looks like shit. It doesn't look, it doesn't look era accurate. And they botched it because what they present him as like an Estes Perkel, hellfire and brimstone, Christploitation filmmaker kind of a guy. Which is also from this era of like, you're going to burn in hell and da 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 da. But then at the end of the movie, we find out this whole like self-help mantra thing she's got going actually comes from her dad's sermons. That's not the type of preacher he is. So if you wanted to make him a prosperity gospel preacher in around Tulsa, Houston area in the 70s, which was also starting to boom and would really come into the boom in the 80s, if you want to make him a Kenneth Hagin figure in particular, then those guys aren't hellfire and brimstone preachers. They're health and wealth preachers. They don't preach hellfire and brimstone. So you just missed it. So what you just said was like, again, you didn't know. It's like saying dad, you didn't know it. You just wanted to have a religious angle on it. And the cleverness of it is you think the old couple are going to be religious and they're not. They're the most debased, perverted sickos in the entire thing. Okay, that would have been a really fucking clever twist, but it's executed so slothily that it like nothing gels enough in this movie to create expectation to then subvert expectation. It moves at such a slow pace, and again, I don't have any problem with that, but when you're moving at a slow pace and all of your ideas are pretty simplistic and they never come together in interesting configurations, then you're sort of like, it just becomes at a certain point inevitability. This couple is going to kill all these people. And there's going to be the final girl, and it's probably going to be Mia. And that's probably her dad on the TV. After the first scene of him being like, my little girl, I was like, well, that's Mia. That's the one doing all the coke. Like, there's no surprises here. There's nothing. And that's why if you're just going to be a visceral movie about sex and violence, then for God's sakes, tighten it up, get this runtime down. Let's not do this whole something crazy happens right in the first 5 minutes because nothing's going to happen for the next 35. I'm tired of it. Let's play it out. Just get to the freaking kills. Make it a visceral movie. Make it survivalist in the woods. And let's all move on with our lives. If you don't have ideas, then give me some pleasure. And this movie left me with cinematic blue balls.
Worst porno ever. I got an idea that this movie posited that coke doesn't have any effect on anybody because it must be like the sweet and low of cocaine because there's nothing. Everybody who does coke in this movie, they're like, hey, I just did some coke. Next.
That's not exactly true because what it does is it gives you the Scorsese shot where we zoom in real quick as your head goes back.
Oh, yeah.
Did you notice that? I was straight out of Goodfellas. But she's in the dressing room and the music's playing. And I'm like, oh, here comes the Leota. Woo! I call that the Leota.
Yeah. You should TM that.
Oh, Ray Liotta is very litigious. Trust me.
As long as I can remember, I always wanted to do cocaine.
As long as I can remember, I always wanted to be a porn star. Are we okay? So I've just derailed your show. I so apologize, but it's kind of the energy I bring. Let me ask you guys this question: is it possible we're just wrong? Are we just being film snobs, and we're wrong since this thing's got a 99% or something on the tomato meter, and Metacritic says it's the greatest movie that ever lived?
Look at the audience meter. The audience meter is significantly lower than the critic meter. Not that I think that shit matters on Rotten Tomatoes, but
yeah, sure.
I don't know. It's interesting what is a critical favorite, and audiences are kind of like, Well, I see your point, but, you know?
Yeah. But for a movie that's being so praised by critics, I'm surprised that there's not more nuanced conversation happening, because that's what we love to do as critics, is like pick at movies and like, you know, for any given movie that, you know, the critical mass is praising, there's always at least a few people out there going, I think there's something not right about this movie, or I don't
that's
like this part
of
the movie.
Right now.
Yeah. But I'm not seeing other people have those takes, which is weird.
Yeah, I've seen them scattered and kind of sprinkled in, like, well, this film is amazing. It's fantastic. It's fun. It has a couple problems. Here they are, but it's great. So, like, I have seen it, but they're really glossed over. And I'm that's what's surprising to me. Yeah, but I don't think we are wrong. I think we can all agree that this is a really technically well-made movie. Yeah. It is. It's just your mileage may vary. That may be enough for you. Maybe you want more, like ideas,
but that's,
messages and, you know, points of view.
Where I get confused, Megan, though, is that's not, I don't see people, at least in my circles, on hashtag film Twitter, coming out of this, or Letterboxd or whatever, coming out of this and going, wow, what a technical achievement. I see people talking about it was scary and it was hilarious and what a fun time at the movies. And again, I didn't hate my experience, but I'm just sitting there. I'm just sitting there and it's the movie's happening and it's not like grating on me, but it's also not, it's just not doing anything for me.
Yeah. Maybe
it's just there.
Maybe it's supposed to be funny that Martin Henderson is speaking like somebody with the knowledge. He's got the knowledge of 70s porn from a 2022 angle. Like, he's from the future, but he's back in 1979 talking about porn. He's a soothsayer. Maybe that's what's funny. You know?
The whole conversation before Jenna Ortega decides to enter the movie, that felt very 2022 as well. Like, I felt like they could have got the same ideas, but I feel like the dialogue would have been different. But maybe I wasn't. Who knows?
Yeah. Plus, it was Martin Henderson, so I was kind of out of the moment anyway. You know what's? I just got to say this though. There's nothing really wrong with him. I've seen a lot of movies he's in. I watched a lot of Grey's Anatomy. He's kind of a fine actor. Yes. I just don't like him. I don't know why.
Sometimes people just rub me the wrong way.
Maybe it's because he got shot in the gut at the end of season 2 of Virgin River. And then at the beginning of season 3, which starts 6 weeks later in the chronology of the show, he's completely recovered from the gut shot. Maybe that's it.
It's the beef.
Dave, I've said this before to you. I will say it again. I'm waiting for your reviews/reaction videos to every single episode of Virgin River.
Megan, last I checked, you were vegan.
I am vegan.
I think this Henderson fella is all beef, though.
Wow.
All beef patties. The glutes on this guy.
Maybe.
God bless America.
He's veggie beef.
Yeah. He's beyond beef. Ooh.
That's right. Yeah. Impossible beef.
Yeah. God bless New Zealand. Yeah. Isn't he from New Zealand? I mean.
He's either Australian from New Zealand. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Which is where they filmed this, as you said.
Yep.
What's impossible it's impossible that he looks that good in tighty whities. That's what's impossible. You can't take it all in, literally.
It's the confidence to wear briefs. Yeah. Yeah. You're just like, okay, wow, that's a choice. You're walking around.
It was a choice.
Yeah, you're walking around outside in the middle of the night and nothing but your tiny underwear.
I feel like that is a 70s thing, though. I feel like dudes in the 70s in the middle of the night would have just walked around in their underpants in Texas. That felt real.
Yes.
That was like one of those details I'm like, because I was around in the 80s and people would do stuff that we don't do now.
So that's really funny because I've been thinking about something that Ty West said about, because his two of his other films were took place in 1978 and 1980, and this film takes place right in between in 79. And he said that one of the things in one of the films was that he didn't want kind of 80s furniture, like that it would look really new. He wanted brown, kind of washed out, faded 70s stuff because it's a carryover from the decade and that's more realistic. And so that's the thing. I think he does have those good, like, he has a good attention to detail in certain things, and then other things it's like, eh, well, whatever. So it's just, yeah, it's kind of inconsistent that way, but it's interesting. But I agree, the tidy whiteys, I thought they were era specific. Yeah.
Just glad they got something right there.
Yes.
So do we have, I'll try to bring our conversation in for a landing. Do we have any kind of final thoughts or things that we felt like we wanted to mention about the movie that maybe slipped through the cracks in conversation?
Sometimes I like to think or imagine what the inspiration for something really is. Not the stuff that people name check and go, oh, well, it was this, it was that, and I watched this movie. Mm-hmm. I like to think about what probably really did subconsciously influence them that they may not even be aware of. And we'll never know. These are just guesses. I like to think that this movie was almost entirely from the subconscious of Ty West. It emerged from an absorption of DMX. In particular, X gonna give it to you.
Yeah.
And I think what the X would give to you was not just the hot beef injection, not just the porno dicking, but also give you the knife. Because when we think about the slashing and the phallic nature of it, and who wields the power in the porn film, really, typically, who makes the most money other than the producers? It's the women. Who's the killer in this movie? It's a woman. Who's really going to give it to you? The woman. And I think DMX said it best. X is going to give it to you.
I love that you brought up gender roles too, because something we didn't even touch on is, you know, Carol J. Clover's, you know, Men, Women, and Chainsaws, talking all about the final girl and talking all about gender and slashers. And slashers are so, especially having a stabbing weapon is so phallic. And Jason, I know you touched on it. You said phallic. But yeah, but it is so interesting that there is that subversion sort of gender. But yeah, it just doesn't.
What are the chromosomes?
Doesn't go
further. What are the female chromosomes, Megan? Enlighten us. Tell us.
XX. Oh!
What? And here's the thing.
The sequel.
Horror movies were typically mm-hmm. rated X. Porno movies before yep. the triple X were rated X. Mm-hmm. XX. And then the female XX. Look at this. We're just, come on. Ty West, what a genius.
We're currently galaxy brain right now. Thanks to Jason. We yeah, are the galaxy brain part
thanks
of that
team. DM. X.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Who knew we would have to thank DMX?
I know, right? Certainly not me.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that was a very effective wrap-up. I feel like we got to, like, Jerry Springer's thoughts, and we like, at the end, it all just kind of came together in a way that made everything make sense.
Be kind to yourselves and each other.
And each other. It was very robust.
Dave, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, I can't follow that up. Yeah. I mean, I can only name some DMX tracks and albums, but none as good as X Gonna Get You. So give it to you. Pardon me.
So I guess the ultimate question is, do we recommend this movie? Would you recommend that someone goes to see this movie? I'm guessing no, but I'll go around the horn and start with you, Jason.
I would say if you want to be a Ty West simp and just join in with the rest of the crowd. No, I'm joking. Look, I think you're making a hit it on the nail on the head. It's your mileage may vary. Everybody else seems to like this movie. And so maybe upon repeat viewing or down the line, I'll come around to it. I'm just saying based on my view and experience, I don't think it's something, especially in the days in which we need to live in, where ticket prices are higher than ever. There's still stuff going on health-wise in the world. I don't say, like, rush out to the theater to see this one. When it comes on streaming or VOD and you like horror movies and genre films, this is probably one to check out. It's not a bad movie. I'm just more ambivalent about it, and I think it ironically misses the mark.
Indeed.
Fair enough. Megan?
Yeah, I think that was incredibly well said, Jason. And I agree. I don't think you need to rush out to see it. I would recommend it just for its technical elements, just for Mia Goth, if you're a Mia Goth, you know, completionist, because she's so great and everything, and for Brittany Snow. But yeah, I don't think you need to rush out and see it. I do think it's worth seeing just for its what it does really well in its technical elements, though. But yes, it is frustrating thematically. and in many other ways. So yeah, just go in prepared, maybe.
Well, Dave. I'll just go ahead and say that I was going to say your mileage may vary too, based on what Megan had said. But I feel like if it were the late 70s or early 80s, and we were still living in a time when there were only really three channels and PBS, and you had to worry about a test pattern, except on Saturday night, you could fall asleep on the sofa, wake up at 1 o'clock, and this would be on, and you wouldn't be disappointed. But if you watched it in any other time, you'd be like, nah, fuck that shit. So I'm gonna say nah.
So it's a qualified pass. It's a pass until, okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a pass until streaming. I like that. I'm gonna copy you.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with all of you. There's no reason to rush out to see this. I don't think seeing it in the theater is gonna make a major difference in your life. I'm almost on the like don't see it camp, just because I found such like. Even though I found it like really technically engaging, like I just felt so icky about the content of the movie. And I guess I would only recommend seeing it to be able to like see the movie for yourself and like have a conversation and possibly have a different conversation than the one that's currently happening out there, where everyone's just like not able to see this movie's flaws. I'd like more people to come to our point of view and to maybe like watch the movie and recognize some pretty major flaws in it.
Yeah. Evan, you're making me realize that talking about the icky factor, and yeah, there are many movies that I feel very icky and uncomfortable watching afterwards, but that's a whole other conversation. Yeah.
There's at least one I can think of that's not true.
Oh.
I'm not going to. That's between you and I.
No, that is still true. I know what movie you're talking about, and it is still true.
Is this one we'll just have to listen to binge movies to find out?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a sly little plug there.
Nice. Okay, well, this has been a really fun conversation about X. I want to say a huge thank you to Jason from Binge Movies for joining us. It's been a lot of fun talking about this film with you. Enjoy the shirt and the lighting. It's been it's been a treat. Want to say a huge thank you to our editor, Otto Klammer. Otto, thank you for making us sound so great week after week. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Otto.
Thanks, Otto. And thank you, Jason.
Yes, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here. I know I brought a little chaotic energy, but I think on the alignment guide, I'm chaotic good. So I brought some chaotic good energy here to our party.
Chaotic good is the best of the alignments, let's be clear.
Megan is probably chaotic good, right? Yeah, okay, there we go.
Yeah.
Only the real nerds know what we're talking about.
That's right.
It's an honor to be here. I mean, 400 plus episodes now is no small feat in the podcast world. I mean, as you all know, most podcasts don't make it. Most podcasts don't have listeners. Even the ones that are still putting out content, you know, they don't have an audience. You guys have an audience. You have patrons. I know I'm preaching the converted if you're listening to Spoiler Piece, but what you've been able to build over the years here, and then obviously the smartest decision you ever made was bringing Megan on board.
Thank you, Jason.
And it's got a great show, and I'm excited to see the guests you're going to have, because you guys have been around so long. You have such a good reputation in the podcast community. You're going to be able to get some real quality film critics and good podcasters on. So I look forward to seeing who else you're going to have on. And I doubt they'll be as chaotic as I am. And that's okay. You know, it's not for everybody, but
everybody has their own style.
Hopefully some of my ideas made sense. I hope I came through semi okay.
Yeah. I like your chaotic good energy. I consider myself neutral evil. So it all, you know, kind of evens out.
Yeah. As we discussed off mic, I am running on minimal sleep, and there is, I think we said on mic, a tornado warning. So it's real weird in here right now. The lighting, the movie, the tornado, the lack of sleep. I'm feeling peaked.
Well, it sounds like a good reason to wrap up the show. So thank you again, Jason, for joining us. Thank you to Otto, our editor. If you want to find the show, you can find us at our website, spoilerpiece.com. We now have merch. You can actually click on the merch tab up at the top of the page and check out our store on TeePublic. if you want to support the show. You can find us all over social media. We are at Spoiler Piece on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and TikTok. We are Spoiler Piece Theater on Facebook. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email. We're spoilerpiece@gmail.com, or you can give us a call
at 862-21-PIECE.
You can leave us a message. We'd love to hear from you. And you doesn't have to be at about a movie. You can just say hi. We like hearing from you. And if you like the show, please rate and review us. You can go to ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece. That'll take you to your platform of choice to review us. And, you know, that helps more people find the show. And if you really, really like us, please consider becoming a patron. As I mentioned at the top of the show, this week's Patreon exclusive audio, we are talking about the 2000 film What Lies Beneath. And so, yeah, you can check that out by going to patreon.com/spoilerpiece. So thank you again to Jason, our guest, and you guys should check out Binge Movies. My name is Evan Crean. I am co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Real Recon. That's real as in film real.
My name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. You can follow me on Twitter at Opinioness World or on Instagram and Letterboxd at TheOpinioness.
And I'm Dave Riedel. I write about movies. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. You want to find me on the tweets and the Letterboxd and the Instagrams. I'm at Dave Sees Movies.
And Jason, where can everybody follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Binge Movies, letterboxd.com/Binge Movies. You can find the show on all your favorite podcast platforms, and you can find our Patreon at patreon.com/Binge Movies.
Awesome. Thanks again for joining us, Jason. We'll see you next week, folks.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.